Contrary to what some claimed, painting did not die in 1965 to be replaced by video, performance, and conceptual art. In fact, those newer artistic mediums actually expanded the possibilities for painters. New York painting from 1967 to 1975 is featured in a show called High Times, Hard Times. It's an exhibit at the National Academy Museum and School of Fine Arts, and it's on display now through April 22nd. I'm very pleased that it has brought two of the artists featured in the show, Dorothea Rockburn and Linda Benglis, to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
Now, as I said, the show includes in its title New York Painting 1967 to 1975, but there are many works that might not be called painting per se. Was the definition of painting expanded, do you think, Linda, in the mid-60s?
Well, in the Bernard Berenson sense, painting as painterly, I thought in terms of painting as extending itself in that way and in other materials.
Dorothea, you said in 1972 in Art Forum that your work was often misread as painting. Was that true in 1972? Because you've used an awful lot of paint in your work since then, haven't you?
It was misread in a very strange way, but I thought of the work that's in that show, Intersection, as sort of as a kind of painting because it does have a carrier and a sheet of oil, which is what painting has, and I wanted to use those elements in a different way, but with a mathematical structure behind it.
So you used oil, but it wasn't oil paint.
No.
But in the end,
oil.
It winds up painting the canvas.
No.
And Linda, in your case, your piece is not our standard rectangular thing that you put on the wall.
No,
either.
It was. I thought that I did not like to see canvas grain, and I was trying to find a new way to make paint. And I began with pigmenting wax and then later latex rubber and then later polyurethane and so forth.
And a number of artists did that, came up with new ways of dealing with the concept of paint. But a lot of the works in this show are what we think of as paintings. They are, some of them are shaped canvases, but a fair number are just those rectangles or squares that have paint covering them from one side to the other.
But that's all within context because the official word on painting in art magazines and so on at that time was not the kind of work that Alan Shields was doing or Mary Heilman. It was really saleable stretched canvas, and I think all of us had a lot of attitude against those things.
But
what do you think, Linda?
We really did. there were issues at NYU. They had a panel discussion. Is painting dead? Is easel painting dead? Stella bragged that he took 2x4s on its side and made his stretchers, and it was just kind of an accident, but it began to be a sculpture. And other people sort of bragged that they could just pick up the phone and order their colored sculpture and often were surprised about what occurred.
Was that Don Judd who said
yeah.
he could just pick
yeah.
up the phone?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he did.
And he did. People like the off-the-cuff attitude.
Well, I took a class with one of the artists who made the claim the painting was dead. In the late 60s at Hunter College, Robert Morris. And then years later, I went to a show of his, and it was all paintings. So things change.
Yeah, I think about the time I began to talk with him, he said, you work with your hands. I'd like to work with my hands, too. So he decided that he'd hire a blind lady and ask her to do, and tell her what to do and make drawings. And so he felt that he couldn't directly, at the beginning, work with his hands, but he got into it later.
So this is an odd time. But it was also a time when everybody was in New York. And that's not the way the world is today. What brought the two of you to New York? Linda, you're from Louisiana?
That's it.
And did you come here because this was where art was the center of art?
It seemed to be the center of things that were going on. For me, it was either Los Angeles or L.A., and it took me about 10 or so years to go to L.A. finally because I was invited to CalArts. So I really came to New York because I'd been as a little girl going to Europe, to Greece, because I'm part Greek. And I thought that New York was the center of the art world at the time, and I began to kind of think, well, where does painting begin? What happens? And I enrolled at the Brooklyn Museum Art School. Reuben Tam had a few people there. And
I studied with Reuben Tam, too.
You did? At the Brooklyn Museum?
A saintly man.
And as you know, he was very hip. I mean, anybody that was doing anything, he had them over. Flavin came over. He would ask us to go see the Donald Judd show. He would say, there's some new artist, and you should see him.
So this was a great place to be at that time.
Absolutely.
Because it's where it was kind of like a learning experience as much as anything else, and it was also an opportunity to meet people who you might not meet otherwise. In your case, Dorothea, you're from Canada, and you came here by way of Black Mountain College, but you probably met all of those great New Yorkers when you were at Black Mountain in North Carolina.
I met some of them. I mean, you know, studied with Guston and Franz Kline, and certainly knew all the poets and Merce Cunningham and John Cage.
That's pretty exciting.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You know, Black Mountain was, you know, just such an incredible place. I can't get over the education I received there. But my teachers at Black Mountain, Jack Torkoff, Vincente, kept saying, go to New York. And I was married and had a child at the time, and my husband was not at all cooperative about wanting to come to New York. But finally, I made my way here, and I stayed for a while in Vincenti's loft on 10th Street when I first got here. And then I figured it out. Mm-hmm. And it was a very vibrant time.
Well, this was an exciting time historically for America as well. But you can't imagine any place in the world being the center of art today, can you?
No, it's all over.
I mean, an artist, it's just like working with a computer. You can work anywhere in the world and just send it in to the home office. Painters and sculptors and every other kind of artist, they're dispersed all over the world these days. But there was a time when the sense was the further you were away from the whatever it was in, I guess it was the Village or Soho in New York, every mile further away, you were more likely to be a provincial.
Well, art always needs its support. And I think we were lucky enough to have had each other during that time. And that was the kind of support system. There's a situation going on in India now where art is rapidly changing, and they're really getting away from imitating Western art and imitating their own idea of miniature art. And a lot of that is occurring because they're also seeing each other, they're commenting, and they are beginning and are competitive with ideas that are worldwide. And now they even talk about being competitive with the Chinese artist. And the only problem with the situation with the art in India right now is there's a lot of kind of gambling and within the system. And the collectors are collecting and they're driving the prices up. So that's dangerous for artists.
Of course, gambling and driving prices up is nothing new in the art world, is it?
Well, here it began to happen in the 80s, really.
Now, but I think that the question you bring up is really interesting question. I mean, I love it that the world is art world's international now. But the question you're bringing up is the very question that Katie Siegel and David Reed address in the show. And that's why the show is so incredible, that it really was an extended family at that point. We all knew each other. We all went to each other's parties. We all, you know, had a community. And that no longer exists, even with the young artists in Brooklyn. It doesn't exist in the same way where, you know, we argued each other's ideas, we dismissed each other, we loved, we fought, we ate, we did all these things. So it's great.
My guests are Dorothea Rockburn and Linda Benglis, and they are two of the artists represented in a show called High Times, Hard Times, New York Painting, 1967-1975. It's at the National Academy Museum and School of Fine Arts through April 22nd, and features a wide range of artists: Joe Baer, Dan Christensen, Roy Colmer, Manny Farber, Ron Gertchov, Harmony Hammond, and Mary Heilman, Ralph Humphrey, another person I studied with, a wonderful man, Yayoi Kusama, Al Loving. This is Elizabeth Murray, one of our leading artists still, Ree Morton, an incredible group of artists. A listener sends in this question: would you agree with my assessment that what distinguished their work and much of the work of that era from much of what we see in the galleries today, especially by younger artists who are all the rage, is that the artwork from the late 60s and early to mid-70s is more about asking questions than giving answers?
I would agree with that. And because there was very little product orientation. I think most artists didn't know what the work would look like when they began it, which is not always the case today.
Because today you go to a Whitney Biennial and sometimes you feel like you're being lectured to. You know, mm-hmm. It's bad to be sexist. It's bad to be racist. You know, we should treat the environment better or whatever. And you don't get the feeling from this art that people were telling us that even though they may have very well been interested in those matters.
I think some of that might have come about because of the feminist movement at CalArts. And the fact that people began to focus and be defensive on the focus, certainly the guys at CalArts, David Solly, Eric Fischel, became very defensive because of the feminist movement. And they, you know, may or may not claim they were influenced by that movement. But there was a lot of experimentation at that time and all over. And a lot of the experimentation happened among women, just happened.
In fact, Katie Siegel said in an interview in the Brooklyn Rail that she felt that all the men and women in the show had been informed in some way by feminist discourse.
I mean, it could
I
be.
I don't think I was.
Yeah.
You don't?
No, I don't.
But there are a lot of really important
Neither
women
my life
who came out of
work.
this period. So women must have, at least some women, must have felt that they could take chances that they might not have felt they could have taken chances and other eras.
I think women always felt they could take chances because there was no stake.
Yeah,
they couldn't show or sell their work, so it didn't make any difference.
That's absolutely the case. I felt I was kind of riding a wave, and I didn't like those issues. I thought they were kind of very contextual, and I tried to put them in just that way because I was also, I guess, more involved with formalism in a very logical sense, and where painting went and was going. I liked Ralph Humphrey because he was doing something with color. He was doing something with canvas and shape and surface. And it's a shame he, you know, died so early.
Young.
Yeah.
Well, what about, if not feminism, what about the fact that we're talking about a period that went from a lot of optimism in the mid-60s to something quite different. We went through the oil crisis, Watergate, resignation of a president, a recession, the end of the war in Vietnam. Do you think that you were working totally independently of all of those influences?
I think the idea of irony came into the picture then and kind of a removal from what was reality, what is reality, and that kind of, not that it didn't exist in art before, but I think there was a more direct situation in the discovery of, you know, what we were experimenting with. But I think at that point, I think there was a sense and discovery in the media. There was a removal from the object, in a sense. And so things developed, you know, just much more fast.
I think that artists and art are always alienated from their society, and I think they're alienated now, although it seems like many artists are cooperating with the galleries and the market, and so I think in another way they're just as alienated, and I certainly felt alienated all the way through and do to this day.
Well, there was a period where art dealers were even telling artists what kind of work to make. Pat Hearn was suggesting styles for her artists.
They still are.
this show is called High Times, Hard Times. Do you think that suggests that they've got to be hard times for interesting art to be made?
I think there really has to have, artists have to have a focus, and they have to be in tune with what that focus is, and it helps to communicate with other artists and with people, and it helps to be in and aware of one's society and place in the world.
I find it interesting that what happened immediately following this period is that we had the return of the figure, although figurative art had been pronounced dead even earlier than painting had been pronounced dead. Do you think that, do you see any significance, Dorothea, in what happened?
Certainly. The Western German dealers had been poking around in Eastern Germany because good dealers are always looking for good artists, and in the process of that, they discovered Baselitz and Penka and Polka and all of those people, and that resulted in the big Berlin show with the title that I can never pronounce, which you corrected my pronunciation on. It's Sturmen...
Drung,
there you go. And many American artists saw that show. It was a year of the Venice Biennale and Documenta. And when they came back, they were all painting, figurative painting, people who'd been doing rather imitations of my work. I was quite relieved that they were now doing figurative painting and good figurative painting, very avant-garde work.
Well, it's nice to be imitated, but it's also nice to have people let you have your own style.
Yeah.
There's, by the way, a slideshow of 19 of the works in this exhibit on our show page at WNYC.org. The exhibit is at the National Academy Museum and School of Fine Arts, which is on Fifth Avenue. And what street? What's the cross street?
89th.
And I want to thank both of you so much for having been such wonderful guests on the show, Linda Benglis and Dorothea Rockburn, two of the many wonderful artists represented in High Times, Hard Times, New York Painting, 1967-1975.